the Protect Connect podcast. Top 5 MMA feuds. Revenge is a dish best served cold.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, everybody? This is the Protect Your Neck podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com and contributor to MMALatestNews.com. This is the Protect Your Neck podcast, a podcast that focuses on high-level MMA. We break down UFC fight cards pre and post fight, but we also do top five episodes to balance out the format and pay homage to this great sport of ours. And today, this week, we are doing top five feuds, and I figured what better person to bring in than one of my favorite people to talk MMA with from the aforementioned MMA Latest News, the host of the Pound for Pound podcast with Sam Alvey. We have Jordan Killian in the house tonight.
What's up, man? And I thought you were going to say we have a feud ourselves.
Oh no, I hope not. No,
not at all.
Maybe over this list when we start getting down to three to one, but no, that's not.
Super pumped to be here, man. I'm really excited to talk about this stuff with you.
Dude, I am pumped to have you. Obviously, you know, anybody that's followed either of us, you know, we're no stranger to each other, me and Jordan. You know, I've been lucky enough to be on his show, and we've done a lot of the round tables for MMA Latest, which are always fun, where we sit down and break down stuff and Jordan will probably be on this show in the future. I'm not going to lie. He's one of those guys that I wouldn't mind having on if he wants to come back on, whether it's a breakdown show. But this is great, man, because we have the top five show here, and we really, really have to reach back. We have to reach in a lot of places. I'm sure Jordan himself will get to it, but it was dusting off a lot of shelves of the MMA shrine that, whoa, I forgot all about this. And so these ones particularly, it's great to have such a knowledgeable person to bounce things off of. So we're going to jump really right into it. There's not that much news in current events because there's always a lot of news in current events. So that's not really the thing. I try to ignore it if possible. Not too much going on in the MMA lexicon. So we're going to jump into our top five MMA feuds. Jordan, before we get started, man, what was it like? Were you visiting a lot of places from your MMA fandom that you've not ventured in quite some time before?
So when you told me the premise for the top five, I was super excited because I think this is a really interesting topic. And so like what I did is I made a gut reaction list, and then like I thought about it for a couple days and like researched it and then kind of adjusted it. And you know what I found is that my gut reaction, I was basically spot on with it. I adjusted where on the list I put a couple of them, and I might have moved one from honorable mentions into the actual list. But for the most part, like there was like seven or eight that came to mind right away, and those were basically the ones that I wound up sticking to.
Yeah, man, I'm not going to lie. In the past couple of days, I slowly compiled a list of stuff that would come to my head. And it's almost a page long, but even just 10 minutes ago, I switched my number 2 and 5 around. So, I mean, it's like, it's one of those things, and it's going to happen. I pay homage to a format. I make no qualms about it, to the Film Vault, one of my more favorite film podcasts. And they do it with film, and I say, well, why not we do this with MMA? But even then, they're arguing with themselves all the way up to recording time, and they're pros. They've been doing it for years. And when you're passionate about something, whether it's film or MMA, well, I think that's a good signal that we're passionate about something worthwhile, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. What did you I just want to ask you before we get into it. What did you take into account when you were making your list and deciding what goes on your list?
Perfect question. That was the next thing I was going to cover. With this list and with many, I hope, hopefully, if I'm creative enough with creating the categories, you can take like different angles. So like Jordan was kind of insinuating he was going with off a gut reaction. So I'm really excited to see what he has. But you can take it for literal. Like, I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of feuds are generally between two people. And we're talking about MMA where two people often get to just hit each other with a bunch of things under the unified rules. It's going to be a lot of that. And there's no right or wrong answer. That's completely fine. But I went out of the bounds too in my list. Just for an example, I'll throw one out there that I'm almost positive is not going to be on Jordan or mine's list. So this could be a good example of kind of thinking, you know, along the outside of the angle. Tim Means versus the MMA media almost made my list for top five MMA feuds. But A, it's recent. It didn't have that historical value to make the list. And two, it's ongoing because it seems like every fight now, even the last fight that didn't have anything to do with the media, with the whole confusing call on the ref, Tim Means turned, it's like, F the media. Close your laptops.
That's such a good one because I was like, I know Dan. I know he's going to come out of left field with one of these things. So that's awesome, man. And that's a good one. It makes a lot of sense, too, if you take it for what it's worth, a feud, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be between two fighters. And I thought about that a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, it can be broader general. The good thing is we get to kind of expand upon it, you know, whereas you guys participating, especially if you're doing it through Twitter, you know, you only can kind of submit your list, which is why we have the hashtag for you to participate, hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast, for that one. But, you know, still yet, we're going to have our submissions in transition period, which is at the end of every show, where if it's a breakdown show, you want something broken down or you have a technical question, we get to it as many as we can every time. And for these shows, you submit your top five list. So we'll get to kind of me and Jordan will kind of give you credit with your handle and your name. We'll even unpack a little bit of your list, too, as much as we can at the end. So we're going to do that at the end, but first, we're going to start our top five. We go from five to one, so we're going to start off at number five. Again, no wrong answer, but hope you're playing along at home. Hope you have your top five ready, and hopefully we mentioned some of yours. Mine to start off, this one is more along the lines of outside of the cage feud. It does involve a person, but it also involves a non-person, an entity, if you will. It was a peak time for mixed martial arts. It was a peak time for the UFC, and it was a peak time for Dana White. Dana White had many feuds, which I don't want to step on too many because there may very well be some on your list, Jordan. But this particular one is Dana White versus Strikeforce, because this was awesome. I mean, I think at a certain point when this was Dana's vlog series was in full effect. And I think at one point in his office, he had some type of shrine or piece of commemorative work of all the competing organizations, and he would cross them out. And it was like a big deal when he got Strikeforce. But before he bought Strikeforce and dissolved that organization, there was like a period of a year and a half with Scott Coker. And I'm a big Scott Coker fan. I think history is doing Scott Coker well, especially the last couple of years. He's just, you know, people are just appreciating him more and more, as they should. He's awesome. Goddamn, Scott Coker, if you guys remember before this last year, before they were sold, Scott Coker would literally be sweating his balls off in every interview. Like, you could just see him perspirate more than any person I've ever seen sweat in my entire life was a Scott Coker Strikeforce interview, because they were in those competition days and firing at each other back and forth. But it was just such peak Dana White, such peak promotional battles. I really like that one. Jordan, do you have a favorable spot for this one?
Absolutely. That's a good one. It's not one that I thought of, but it definitely fits the bill. I mean, if you were watching MMA at that time, Strikeforce had such an amazing roster of fighters that the hardcore fans loved Strikeforce, but it was never going to do the numbers that the UFC did, because the UFC was an established brand. And I think Dana White, the way that he was trying to keep his brand above the Strikeforce brand, because if you actually went like pound for pound the fighters that each of them had, you could make an argument that the Strikeforce roster was better than the UFC roster at that point. It wasn't as deep, but towards the top of some of the divisions, you could make the argument that the Strikeforce divisions were better at the top of the division than the UFC were. So Dana, he's a great businessman. He knows how to market. So he went out and he would attack Strikeforce, and he would do everything in his power to make sure that you cared more about the UFC than Strikeforce. And that obviously the pressure and the ratings were always going to go to the UFC. And so inevitably when Zuffa purchased Strikeforce and they wound up dissolving and all those fighters came over, just look at some of the talent, man. I mean, you got Rousey came from over there, Misha Tate, obviously a lot of the women, the female fighters did, but Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, Bigfoot was fighting over there. I mean, you had Arlovski and Krokop, or not Krokop, sorry, Fedor Emelianenko, and I mean, the list goes on. They had a ton of Luke Rockhold, Jacare, all these great fighters fighting over in Strikeforce. Just a phenomenal roster, and the UFC really, once those guys got in here, they almost you had a run for a while where we had like three or four Strikeforce champs that were the UFC champs. It was kind of crazy. So that's a good one, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, they had their own, you know, they cultivated their own environment, if you will. I mean, there were feuds or borderline rivalries, which we may or may not touch on later, that happened within that organization in its own. But yeah, that one always has a special place in my heart as a fan. But what was your number five, Jordan?
My number five, I think I might get a little flack on this, but that it's not higher on my list. But I went Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz is my number five rivalry. Obviously, this nice. this was one of the first big ones that I remember as a fight fan. You know, everyone that I knew liked Chuck Liddell. I grew up in small town Midwest America where Chuck Liddell was like the man's man. Everyone loved Chuck Liddell. People liked Randy Couture a lot too, obviously, but like Liddell was the guy. At this point, I was still going to like restaurants to watch the pay-per-views because I was like, 15 and couldn't afford them on my own, and my mom wouldn't let me order them, so I would have to go sneak out with buddies to go to a restaurant to watch it. And I remember watching UFC 47 when Chuck Liddell knocked out Tito Ortiz, and it was all the lead up to this fight, and then the actual outcome, the place went nuts because I was, like I said, in a place where everyone was a Chuck Liddell fan, and I honestly didn't have a dog in that fight. I liked them both kind of equally. I liked both the guys, and Liddell gets the win. The place erupts, goes nuts. You fast forward, these two are still going at it for a long time. Finally, at UFC 66, they get back at it after all this lead up again, and Chuck TKOs him again, and it was pandemonium, man. You could tell these guys really didn't like each other. I think they respect each other, but that was one of the first big rivalries I can remember since watching combat sports.
Dude, I'm so glad you put that one on there. That's on my list for mentions for sure. Didn't quite make the list because something similar that has one of those connecting pieces will appear later on the list, but I'm glad you put that one because that was a big deal, man. And I don't even know if I could be considered a casual fan. I might have been a notch under a casual fan because I remember when that fight happened to where, like, now we're hardcores or we work in, work in different aspects of the sport. And, you have your relative go, oh, did you hear the Ronda Rousey McGregor fight? And you're like, yeah.
Right.
But those same people, I remember my stepdad going, oh, Liddell Ortiz is fighting this weekend. And had to remind me. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I worked valet at the Caesars Palace then. And you could really feel, it was only UFC 47, like Jordan said, but, and it wasn't, this was before the tough era, before FS1, yeah. Before any of that, right? But Vegas is a fight town, man. You could feel the aura in the air. I mean, that's when I would first get my first glimpses of Dana White. He would come through the valley, was a good tipper, by the way. And, you would feel it when fights were in town. We see, Tito come in with Jenna Jameson at the time and whatnot. I mean, you really felt that aura, and that was peak UFC. So I'm glad you made that on your list, man.
Yeah, and I just one more funny note. I remember being I was in high school when this happened, so I remember that the one big takeaway that I took from it was that Tito wore his like flame shorts and that Chuck had his like Iceman shorts.
Also classic.
I remember being like, did they make them wear these pants? Because they look like, I was probably in the same boat as you, kind of a casual fan. I knew their names. I was excited to watch them fight. I watched the fights before that, not knowing basically who anyone was, but I knew Chuck Liddell and I knew Tito Ortiz and I knew that ice versus fire was happening. And this was way before I got into Game of Thrones. So
it's okay. I'm about to top that nerd reference with a Dragon Ball Z reference because maybe that's what we need to counter this Reebok era. We need to, it's like the Dragon Balls. We need to collect the Iceman shorts. We need to collect the Flame shorts. We need to collect the BJ Penn Black Belt shorts. We need to combine them. And when they form together, they will conquer the evil Reebok era.
Evil that was Reebok it. T-shirts.
Wow. Before we go on to that side tangent, let's latch back onto the number four. Another good thing about having format to a show, right, Dan? There we go. Okay. my number four is a classic one. I almost didn't want to put this one because it seems so – it's so right there. And me, trying to be my hipster self, God forbid I go with the crowd. But this says so much. This says so much. This we've had, Tito Ortiz can be accredited as one of MMA's first promoters. We joke about his trash talk now, but – you rewind it to, the Last of the Mohicans line and Chuck Liddell and that whole era. I mean, he was one of the guys I was bringing attention, to the sport. And BJ Penn, he had his own little pro wrestling chops after the Shirk fight and this and that. But, man, Chael P. Sonnen, I'm sure he may be on your list here, so feel free to jump in. But his feud with Anderson Silva and all the branch offs that came from it, I'd be remiss if it wasn't on the list. That is my number four. Jordan, did you, before I go any further, did you have this on your list?
That one's actually in my honorable mentions. So it's so far so good, okay, man. This is working good, out. Cool. Salt and pepper here.
That's fine. But I mean, you're not getting off the hook that easy. I want to get your opinion here in a second. But I guess the reason why I couldn't deny it a spot on my list and I ended up stacking it up on the number four is because Brian Baker versus Chael Sonnen WEC. I mean, Chael Sonnen, you hear him talk more on his podcast now, how he had these feuds with guys like Ortiz on the U.S., to Vanderlei Silva in Japan before we were aware of him in the last 5 to 6 years, right? He was the guy that really didn't get a shot. He was more of kind of a quiet guy in already what was already stacked divisions. They had a Team Quest back in the day and didn't have the name, but it wasn't something that he woke up with overnight, because that Brian Baker fight I referenced, that's when I first became aware of Chael Sonnen. Because after that post-fight interview, I think it was like a decision win. It wasn't that like impressive. It wasn't anything flashy, but he earned a decision win on top for the most part. And in there, he just said, just in the most genuine way, something along the lines of, to the announcer, unlike most people that signed under the Zuffa organization, I will fight any man that God created. And I was like, oh, crap, I don't even know if I believe in God, but I believe in Chael Sonnen right now. Holy crap. And you saw him slowly kind of build off that. It took him a while. He stumbled against Maya. And then you just had, I remember, because it was August 7th, my birthday. And so I was excited for this card just because it was on my birthday, right? I mean, I think, you know, you had John Fitch, Thiago Silva 2.
Right.
Thiago Alves 2. You had some fights on there. But, you know, this was the main event. And you were like, oh, who are they feeding Anderson at this point? But I almost remember him starting to sell me, and I'm not even talking like BJ Penn versus Yair Rodriguez, because it'd be blasphemous to even question Anderson Silva at this point. This isn't the Anderson Silva that people know now, casual fans now know now. This was you know, the peak Anderson Silva, and for him to pull it off, and then what it created, and you know, for the Brazil runoffs and all that stuff, and then the big nog with the, you know, big nog and the little nog jokes, the aerial interview, and just how, you know, how he able to take the controversy of losing and testing positive and all these things, and they didn't give him the rematch. I think the UFC would have, you know, perhaps if it was in this era, they may have, but he had to fight Brian Stann and hard fought battle against Michael Bisping to get back there. And so, I mean, it was a long lasting feud. It was an important one for many careers and for UFC and kind of the model going forward. So it earned a spot on my number four.
I think that's totally worthy of being in a top five. I'll say this about Chael in this situation is that I've never seen, still, even with the rise of McGregor and Rousey and all these people, I've never seen someone shoot from being relatively unknown to basically everyone in the sport knowing who he is as quick as Chael Sonnen did. Chael Sonnen, the first time I had not seen him fight in the WEC, I just guess I missed all those cards. I wasn't as vigilant with the WEC as I was. Like, I would try to watch it if I could. I remember it was on a weird channel that I didn't know if I had. It was on like Versus or something like that, and I didn't know if I had the channel that WEC was on. So like, I would watch it sometimes. So I never caught any of his fights in the WEC, but I do remember watching UFC 95 and his debut against Maya, which is one of the most remarkable finishes ever. I love that finish where Damian hits him with the lateral drop and then mounts him with the triangle. It's crazy. It's
so nice.
It's so nasty. And so I kind of wrote him off. I was like, man, Maya just schooled. This guy sucks. Like, Maya just schooled him. But I also didn't know how good Damian Maya was at that point. So you had to take that with a grain of salt. He goes on to beat Dan Miller, beat Yushin Okami when Okami was a bad man. Like, Okami was beast at that point. And then he beats Okami pretty soundly, pretty easy decision, out grapples him. Then beats Nate Marquardt when Nate Marquardt was probably at his prime. That was like the best Nate Marquardt. This is like 2010. Marquardt's beating everyone up in the title eliminator. He beats Marquardt. And I remember being like, holy crap, they're going to give this guy, well, Silva's still going to wreck this guy. And Chael's talking all kinds of trash, like to the point where it's like, I've never, at this point, there was no McGregor. I had never heard someone talk smack like this, ever. Because I obviously wasn't around for Muhammad Ali's prime. Tyson was never much of a talker. And so, you know, this is the first time I've ever heard someone talk this well. Like, speak this well and trash talk this well. So, and then he goes out and beats the crap out of Anderson for 4.5 rounds. Like, it was a dominant dominant performance by Chael. And say what you want, Anderson was hurt, blah, 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 came in. You know what? No one goes in 100% to a fight. You and I know that. Everyone who watches combat sports knows that. You don't go into a fight 100%. He was dominating. He got caught late with that triangle. It's one of the craziest finishes. And then, like you said, yeah, he has to go out, fight Brian Stann and Michael Bisping, two really tough fights, and then gets his second shot. And the lead up to that second fight, I mean, you get the, was it after the Michael Bisping fight or after the Brian Stann fight where we got the, Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck.
Brian Stann fight, which he could have, it took a moment to embellish himself, but yeah, it was that fight.
Right, he just, that was the post-fight speech. Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck, period. That's the end of it. It was amazing.
Yep, that's so great.
The way Chael went from a nobody that lost his debut to everyone knows Chael Sonnen, and people were liking him. I remember I hated him because I loved Anderson Silva so much. So like I was, and you know, I was a young man and I was like, oh, screw this guy. You know, I was kind of coming at it from a WWE fan standpoint. You know, I was really falling into Chael's heel tactic. Like he had me hook, line and sinker, but man, you loved him or you hated him. Either way, you watched that fight. And it was a great rivalry that was honestly very one-sided in the promotional standpoint. Anderson kind of did it with his gravitas and his record. Like, that's kind of what Anderson's trash talk was. It was like, this dude's the best. This is the best that anyone's ever seen. And then this guy's talking all kinds of smack and almost beat him. So it was, yeah, that's a great pick. I'm actually talking myself. I don't know why I didn't put it on my list.
No, that's good. That's better that you did it in that case, man. I'm glad we've already made it about halfway through the spread. Did you say your number four though already? Or?
I didn't. No, I'm sorry. I went on a diatribe about that.
No worries. No, that was good. No, it was, I'm with you on that.
100%. Yeah, start just flipping me off if I need to cut. If I need to start shutting up.
No, man, no, it was good. I was with you 100%. I was like, yeah, that's right. Me, people can't already tell me. Me and Jordan are kind of cut from the same ilk and era of MMA fandom. So yeah.
And we like to talk about Scottie Pippen too.
Yeah, there we go. Scottie P.
All right. My number four, I think the rest of these are fairly, spoiler alert, these are all pretty fairly recent. I think we're in the golden age of MMA right now. So my number four is Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate.
Nice.
This is one that there is no love lost between them. And it's one that I, as a fan, as the older I got, the more I flipped to one side of like understanding this rivalry. Because I remember... First, when Ronda Rousey first burst on the scene, I was kind of in awe of her. And I've always thought about it in a way that what we were seeing in women's MMA was kind of what we were seeing in the early UFC days when we were first seeing MMA in general. We were seeing specialists really dominate. And Ronda was a specialist. You know, she's a phenomenal judoka. She's got great groundwork. She's strong. And she was just armbarring all these women so quickly. She The first time that Rousey and Tate fought was back in Strikeforce, and it was that submission that she bent Misha's arm backwards, and it's tough to watch, man, because Misha is tougher. She's too tough. She's too tough for her own good, because she let her arm get bent the wrong way before finally I think Herb jumped in and stopped it. Misha didn't even tap, I don't think. So that was the first one. There was a lot of no love lost between these two. Ron, they coached tough against each other. You get the Ronda really came off kind of snotty and arrogant and really, really didn't like Misha. And the more as I'm getting older, the more I'm watching Misha, I'm like, she seems really nice. And Ronda kind of seems like a jerk.
Yes, right. Yeah.
It's kind of what it started off as. And I'm like, you know, part of me is like, man, I really am rooting for Misha here. But then when I'd see him fight, it was like, man, Ronda's probably going to beat this girl. Like, Ronda's really good. But anyways, they wound up fighting again. It was a lot closer this time. You know, Misha really kind of made it more of a fight. Anyways, Ronda ended up winning the second fight via sub as well. But I think just the attitude, that kind of changed the way that a lot of people looked at women's MMA, because it was the first rivalry. It was the first rivalry in women's MMA. You know, Ronda was she was on this pedestal for so long. And obviously since with the losses, it's kind of tarnished it. But don't get it twisted. When Ronda was on top of the world, like, she was scary, man. Nobody was lasting very long with her. And the fact that Misha kind of had the guts to get up and go back at her again and do the Ultimate Fighter against her and kind of stand toe to toe with her. It was a special thing, and it was very important for women's mixed martial arts.
Dude, I'm so glad you put that on. Not only is that an honorable mention, but that was one of the more like closer ones to making it on my list. that I had to fight getting it off of, and I almost felt like a crime putting it off there, because not only is it the best example, I mean, it's head and shoulders the best example for females MMA, and as far as importance of that, you know, that rivalry going through. I remember watching that and going up from a Ronda fan, because, you know, she came up through Tough Enough, an organization that I, you know, fought under the same year. And we shared a similar grappling lineage, in the sense that she was from, you know, Judo Jean LaBelle. Jean LaBelle had ties with Goku Richovichian, which was Carl Parisian, Neil Melanson, myself. So, I mean, there was a bit of a lineage there. So I should have been rooting for Ronda, but the post fights and stuff. And then I was like, okay, she's just using it to get the, you know, the title shot in Strikeforce against Tate. Don't take that personal, because I'm, you know, especially, you know, then that, you know, that version of Dan Tom, super, just all martial artists, all honor, all respect. So I was not digging the trash talk. And then seeing the arm break and just, oh, it was brutal. And then, you know, got over it and appreciated the rivalry for what it was. You had that whole tough buildup. And by the way, I'm good friends with the producer on that show. And yeah, apparently, Tate wasn't the only person Ronda wasn't nice to. And I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. Yeah, from good sources. But anyways, yeah, it was a great, really important rivalry. So I'm really glad you had that on your list.
Dan, I thought you were going to say you guys are from the same lineage, as you were also a bronze medalist in the Olympics.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to mention that, but my bronze medalist is for synchronized dancing. So, I mean, so that's a little different. It's a little different bronze medal there. So I didn't want to. Yeah, don't ask. I was oh my gosh. But hey, on that note, we're going to take a quick break here, actually, before we get to our top three. And when we come back, we will get to our top three and your top five MMA feuds right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. Cucarachas enojadas. Here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for the top five MMA feuds, here with the pound for pound podcast host Jordan Killian, help me break things down. We are on our number three selection here. So, Jordan, do you want to change pace? Do you want to kick us off with your number three?
Sure, man. Yeah, you're the host. I'll go first here. My number three selection is a one where I love both these people so much. My number three is BJ Penn and George St. Pierre.
Oh, nice.
This one wasn't so much of a verbal feud as it was. There was just a bad taste in everyone's mouth after their first fight. It was a very close fight. It was a controversial decision. GSP got the win. That was back at, I think, UFC like 58. It was a split decision win. Really, really close fight. That it was two guys who are two of the best ever. So I think that's one reason I put it in there. Just the talent level of both of these guys, just off the charts. There was a kind of a weird taste in everyone's mouth. BJ made some comments that, you know, that I got robbed in the first fight. George didn't win. They get booked to fight again at UFC 94. There is some kind of smack talk, mostly from BJ, cause he felt like he was robbed of a win. And a lot of people feel that way too. I've watched the fight multiple times, and honestly, that is one of the closest things to where I would want to give, you know, a 10-10 or like a 9-9 round ever. I think that fight is so razor close that it's so
classic example.
Yeah,
classic example.
It's such a close fight. It's one of those where, do you value someone who's able to control where the fight takes place, or do you value the guy who did more damage? Because BJ did more damage, but George really controlled where the fight took place. So it was a really, really close fight. There was a little bit of animosity, I think, mostly from BJ, because he felt slighted after that first one. So leading up to the second one, and this was two guys who were both champs going into fight at UFC 94. This was one of the first I can remember super fights. Like, this was a legit super fight. This was GSP, BJ Penn, two of the biggest names in the sport. I was so pumped for it, man. And George came out like a freaking demon, and he put a beating on BJ, and they wound up throwing in the towel after the fourth round. You know, there was a lot of things that BJ said that, you know, leading up to it. I think he felt, like I said, slighted after that first fight. And I think George really took it to heart. And it was not a close fight that second time around. But I think it was important in the sense that this was two guys who typically don't. BJ was not a 170er. He would fight at 170. BJ is the classic example of a guy who would fight basically anyone anywhere. He's one of the toughest dudes to ever, walk the planet. But this is a dude coming up to fight the champ at a different weight class way before Conor McGregor was even thinking about doing something like this. So this mm-hmm. was it kind of set the bar for what is possible as far as cross division fights. And it was important, and it was a huge rivalry between two guys at the top of their game, two of the best to ever fight. So my number three is BJ Penn and George St. Pierre.
I don't even know what's on the rest of your list, Jordan, but I am so happy more than anything that you brought that up. I didn't put anything BJ Penn on my list because if you follow me, you know that I have done way too much BJ Penn content in the last 2 weeks between my last top five, which hopefully you listened to. It was a fun one with me and Jordan's mutual friend, Robin Black, BJ Penn moments, to my long form article. I had BJ Penn coming out of my ears, so I left him off this list completely. So that being said, I'm really glad Jordan put him on there because, yeah, that is true. I mean, not just way before Conor thought. Let's be exact. One UFC before is the storied story of Conor being at Ireland for UFC's first show. Remember?
Right.
Shogun versus Mark Coleman. That was just one before 94. And that's where Conor was just a fan in the stands. I mean, to kind of put a timestamp on Jordan's point there. I could, go on for days. Hopefully, you can go find that article. It came out with MMA Latest News. I archived it on MixedMartialAnimals.com. Just so it has some past life now that, it's kind of past its time. But I really put a lot into that article. But in that, I didn't really touch too much on the George St. Pierre thing. But Jordan's absolutely right. That was a classic fight. I mean, I wasn't much of a guy to argue, much less on the forums. But I remember getting into some forum discussions before pre-UFC 94. Mm-hmm. Because if you really look back at time, at that point, you really could have made, even though it was before Florian and Sanchez fights, you could have made the strongest arguments for anybody waving the BJ Penn flag as far as, what this guy's done. And if you kind of read between the lines and don't just, take the record for as is. And that is the classic fight, their first fight of, damage versus control. BJ's famous quote was to Jordan, "I spent the night in the bar, he spent the night in the hospital."
Right.
It was really great, and although it kind of it is sad because it was the most important fight for BJ Penn's career and for history, and even in retrospect with Conor achieving what he did at 205 even more so, BJ Penn sadly had his worst performance at 94. What's up?
Right. Oh no, I was just gonna say, and just for context too. I mean, after the St. Pierre fight, he lost to Matt Hughes, but after that, it was when he went on that little tear between 2007 and 2008, where he just absolutely wiped the floor with Jens Pulver, Joe Stevenson, one of the biggest beatings in a title fight I can ever remember. And then Sean Sherk, where he just obliterated Sean Sherk. So that three fight streak is what you said is 100% true. That's BJ. That's prime BJ right there. So he was looking good going into that second fight. So that's why the anticipation was so high going into that fight, because you were like, oh crap, BJ's looking like a killer. And that first fight was close, and George is so much bigger than him. But
absolutely,
it was a crazy fight.
And before we move on, postscript to your point too, I mean, that rivalry was so potent that it even kind of carried over for the reason why BJ probably even came out of retirement to take on Rory McDonald later, because of the tri-star remnants of it and just, the association that any fighter makes, you take something personal. Right. But that's how potent that rivalry was. So that was a really good choice. My number three is we're going to rewind back to Tito Ortiz, like you said. The reason why I didn't have Tito and Chuck, although I express why that is more than worth this list. Obviously, there's no right or wrong answers, but more than worth the list. But I had Ken Shamrock versus Tito Ortiz. Even when the record, by the time the third fight happened, it was like, oh, this is kind of sad. This is one of those sad 0-3 rivalries, even more sadder than the BJ Penn Frankie Edgar of 0-3, right? I mean, it was really one-sided, controversial, drubbing. It had everything with Shamrock Ortiz, and history hasn't been kind to either man, so it hasn't been kind to this rivalry at all. But the reason why it makes it on my list is probably more of a personal note. Again, I was barely even come Chuck Tito, which was just maybe a notch after this, right? I was barely even a casual fan up until that point, but I did hear about Shamrock and Ortiz, and that brought me to UFC. I came up in Taekwondo, competing on the regional national scenes, went to Kempo Karate, trained over in China for a little bit over here, but I was a little reluctant. I thought it was more gimmicky. I wasn't sure what it was in the dark ages, MMA. I wasn't sure what to make of it. And speaking of gimmicky, my ass was a pro wrestling fan, though, ironically, of all things. But I was a pro wrestling fan like you, Jordan, in the golden era. I haven't followed anything in the last decade or more.
The attitude era of the WWE.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, and even though I wasn't familiar with MMA, I was familiar with Japanese pro wrestling and that style. So I was a big fan of Ken Shamrock. But, oh, this guy's using submission holds. He's using, you know, anybody knows, you know our history of the sport from Pancrase to Japan and how it actually has roots in pro wrestling and Japanese pro wrestling. I was a Ken Shamrock fan. So this caught my eye, you know, watching these talk shows. Tito Ortiz was actually even getting play on talk shows, who was arguably less popular than Ken Shamrock at that time. And, you know, showing talk show hosts what a head and arm triangle choke was and all these things. I mean, he was really exposing a generation that Don, people like myself or maybe even Jordan, which, you know, I'm sure he'll touch on his thoughts on this pick here in a second. You know, and it really it competitively, it wasn't much, I guess, what I was saying in the beginning. But what it meant in the big picture and also what it meant to me personally, I believe it hooked in a key audience. And it was really a key thing for the UFC and for the sport. I mean, Tito Ortiz, you know, why does this guy get so much credit? It was because of this era. Go back and watch Tito in this era. He did a lot for the sport. Eloquently or not, he did a lot. So it earned a spot on my number three list for Ken Shamrock versus Tito Ortiz.
I think you could make – it's a great pick, Dan. I think you could make the argument that that one that you just mentioned, Ortiz versus Shamrock, is the most important rivalry in the development of mixed martial arts. Because their third fight was the first time that I can remember. And this was, again, I was not a huge fan. I was a young guy. I liked watching it when it was on, but, you know, I didn't know a ton of the guys. But I knew Ortiz and I knew Shamrock. I knew Ortiz because he had headlined some cards. I knew Shamrock because he had done the pro wrestling gig. And that's kind of where I knew him from. But after their third fight, there was a ton of press leading up to it. The fight happens, and I there's an interesting quote. Spike TV president Kevin Kay actually credited the third fight between Shamrock and Ortiz as being the beginning of mainstream advertisers coming to the UFC and coming into mixed martial arts. He said that, you know, what that fight ratings did is it woke people up and showed that there was an opportunity for the 18 to 34 demographic, that the guys that watch mixed martial arts, which is still the prime demographic for MMA, it's 18 to 34 males. That's the prime demographic. And this one, when they broke out the actual analytics, the Shamrock Ortiz 3 killed in that demo. And that's when you started getting the Harley Davidson's coming over, Bud Light's coming over. All these huge advertisers were coming over, and you could make the argument and directly say that Ortiz Shamrock is the reason that the UFC has grown financially like that and are able to do these huge events like that. So I think it's a great pick.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I figured you would sentiment that one. Again, we're from a similar ilk and era. And that'll bring us to our number two. Now we're getting to the nitty-gritty. I wouldn't be surprised if there's crossover here because even, you know, hipsters like myself, once you get to the top two and one, you really have – make a hard time for yourself, even as much of a contrarian as you want to be, to go against certain ones. So we'll see here what happens. This one's super broad. It's almost unfairly broad, but I'm basing my number two on importance. And that is the most important organizational battle, I think, in the history of our sport, Pride versus the UFC. Jordan, is this one on your list?
It's not. It's all my honorable mentions, but I'm so happy that you put it on your list.
Perfect, man. Perfect. This is even – wow, this is crazy. I'm going to be stoked, but I actually hope now that we get our number one in the same one, the way this is going. But Pride versus the UFC, I mean, you want to talk about importance. And the reason why I say UFC as opposed to Dana White, because Dana White, again, I mean, Dana White, there's so many iterations of feuds, from media to fighters to organizational, right, promoter. This was above Dana White. Dana White wasn't even at that same – wasn't at his peak, you know, wasn't even on that upsend yet. I mean, if you remember, I believe he actually made the trip, if not was in Chuck's corner, for when Chuck Liddell, I mean, the UFC was sending guys over. I mean, they were trying to prove points any way they could. I mean, this was you want to talk about guerrilla warfare? This was guerrilla promotion, promoters. I mean, you know, guerrilla warfare between promoters. I mean, they were doing whatever they could, putting their best guys, you know, as much as they could. And those narratives were so strong that even after all that was done and Pride was dissolved, UFC was still putting together these matchups. Guys were still coming out to the Pride song. It was essentially as broad and as different angles as you could take, from the Japanese scene and the MMA and the Yakuza and the intricacy there, to the UFC and the fact that they actually weren't, you know, the empire, the top power, as they were today then. You know, this really made both promotions and all promotions around the world really step up their game. because whether it's Japan and their weird shows they're doing now to UFC and all the American shows, all the organizations are basing their promotion off of one of two models, Pride's Japan model or the UFC's American model. And nothing personifies that more than the what I perceive as a feud between Pride and UFC in that kind of golden era of mixed martial arts.
This one is as importance wise also got to be up there, because I think the biggest thing that you can do to give credit to Pride is look what the UFC did the minute that they could get some of these Pride guys over to the UFC. They swooped them up and they promoted the bejesus out of them because they knew that these are the stars. I'm lucky enough to, I got into Pride right at the end. That's kind of when I first started getting into mixed martial arts. And again, it was as a casual observer.
Same here.
At that point. I believe the first MMA fight I think I ever watched was the Pride, this would have been Bushido 9, I think. It was right before my birthday in like 2005. And I remember seeing Dan Henderson knock out Ryo Chonin and Akihiro Gono in the same night and being like, holy shit, this dude's awesome. This dude's American as shit. He's just knocking these dudes out left and right. This is the best thing I've ever seen. And so, like, that was all leading up to the Grand Prix final, which was going to be on New Year's Eve. And so I remember talking to my friends, like, this is what we have to do for New Year's Eve. Like, we have to find a way to watch Pride Shockwave. Like, and so we did. And Dan Henderson fought Murillo Bustamante. And it was a really good fight. And it was a split decision. Henderson wound up winning. And it was, like, the best night of my life. It was amazing. So, like, that kind of got me into mixed martial art. Got the bug put into me. I didn't really get into it super heavy until, you know, I was a little bit older. But, man, that instilled it. And, you know, Pride had everyone who's a fan of the sport and has been a fan of the sport for a while holds Pride in this esteem and with such reverie. And I think the UFC does as well. And so when they were able to, acquire Pride and all the contracts that went along with it and bring some of those guys in, they did it as quick as they could. And without Pride, the UFC would not be where it is today, because their rivalry elevated each of them to a better height. And Pride, unfortunately, couldn't keep going at the pace it was going. It was insolvent at that point. But the UFC really took what they were doing and put their own twist on it, did what they could, took some of the talent that they could. But like you said, man, they were sending Liddell over there. He fought Overeem and didn't Rampage TKO him over in Pride, yep. I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were some crazy fights where the UFC guys are fighting Pride guys, but dear God, if that's where you get Prime Fedor, Prime Minotauro, Prime Krokop, like, we could talk for 3 hours about Prime Pride. And
I mean, absolutely. I mean, people talk about, Bellator now, crossover fights they want to see, and you can rewind it further to Strikeforce and go back. But for guys like me and you, it's almost nothing compares to the fantasy barstool talk you could have with your friends during that era, because those were, like you said, the possibilities. Everybody was at their crossroads, different sections, but there was a real crossroads there, man.
Yeah. You're right. But it was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you didn't give your number two though, right? You're number two, Jordan. Awesome. Yep. Cool. All right.
My number two is Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber. That is my my number two, and this is one that I think started slow and ended on a really high note. I think this one got better with both guys' exposure, because I think both guys are way more likable the more you put them in front of a camera and the more you see of them. So this is one, obviously it started with Faber beating Dominic Cruz early in his career at WEC 26, caught him in that guillotine really early. That was Dominic's only loss on his record for a long time, obviously until recently losing to Cody Garbrandt. But after that, you've got Dominic and Faber going at it. They coach tough against each other. They have a fight which was really good. That was a good season of tough, because both those guys were good coaches, man. And Dominic's obviously been out with injuries for a while, but the close fight the second time. But leading up to their third fight, the press tour that they did, and man, Dominic Cruz, he's like a fine wine, man. He's gotten better with age. He's a great analyst. He's phenomenal on the mic, man. He talks trash in such a way, it's so unique, because he doesn't resort to, like, bullying or, like, you know, not calling anybody else out for bullying, but, you know, he doesn't resort to, like, petty name-calling and things like that. He's so analytical, even with the way he talks trash. He breaks down the way you're thinking and what you're going to say and why you're saying that and why you're not going to be able to do what you're saying, and here's why, because here's what I'm going to do. And it's so intricate, and it's such a juxtaposition on the way that Uriah Faber is. Uriah is such a laid-back dude, and you got some of the best trash talk when they were talking about simulated death matches, and, you know, you've never simulated anyone's death. There's so much good talk between the two of them, but this one's important because I think these two guys specifically, you could look at for a reason that we have such a prominent 135 division, why we have a 125 division, why we have 145 division that are doing so well. It's guys like Uriah Faber who have been around for so long, pioneering those lighter weight classes, and a guy like Dominic Cruz who completely changed the way that a good portion of people are fighting. The way that he implemented footwork, classic techniques, and new techniques with his striking, it was revolutionary. So the way that Dom, I mean, you look at some of the guys that came up with Uriah, they're fighting like Dom now. So, I mean, their rivalry, you could almost make it Dom versus Team Alpha Male, but I thought Uriah is really the head of Team Alpha Male, and Uriah is really a pioneer for the lighter weight classes. So I thought Dom versus Uriah Faber was a really big rivalry. Personally, I think it's important for the sport, and it was just really fun for me to watch. So that was my number two.
I'm glad that's your number two, but I am embarrassed, and I got to come clean, man. This is where I would, like, usually say, like, oh, this was definitely, you know, deserving a list, but just made my honorable mentions. I didn't even have this one on my list. It, like, it's one of those – and that, not because it's totally deserving. That's why I'm glad you said it. It's just one of those brain farts things. I literally have every other iteration of, like, Alpha Male and Dillashaw, Crew, you know, like, all these different kind of branches of the rivalry, but the main freaking one. And not only is that the main one of that kind of chapter, but when you look at MMA's landscape – when you want to talk longest lasting feuds,
yeah,
that's at the top of the list. And not even just longest lasting feuds, because you could say, well, Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie is the longest lasting feud. Yes, but their last fight was like in some fantasy land that I'm still not sure really exists. I'm still not sure if that happened in reality, Jordan. But if you look at Cruz and Faber's, it was relevant. You had the pre lightweight pioneer era. It was an important fight in that aspect, their first fight. Then you had the transitionary era where the UFC finally started to embrace the lower weight classes. You had their second fight. Then you had the established era, right? Where now UFC is full force, WIME, Fox Sports, everything's full go. Lighter weight classes are widely accepted. I'd like to say they've always been accepted in people like ours books, but, you know, widely accepted. So you had different eras of those fights. I mean, you really couldn't really get much more of a perfect match when you're looking at things on paper as far as feuds go than Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber. Great choice.
Yeah, and you know, it's three fights over 9 years separated by not only were these guys always basically in the top 5 to 7 in their respective divisions, but they were without injury. You could make an argument if Dom would have stayed healthy, there could have been 4 or 5 fights between these guys.
Jeez.
Because they were so good you know, such there was legit animosity between them. And so
and relevancy.
Absolutely. There were always title implications when those guys were fighting. Yep. So yeah, I think the length of it, not like I said, 9 years. Their first fight was in March of 2007, and their last fight was in June of 2016. So that, if that, you know, that just shows you
almost a decade there. Yeah. I mean, you're getting down to it. Wow. No, great choice, man. I'm really, this is awesome. I'm glad I brought you on. This is the reason why I brought Jordan Killian on for this, ladies and gentlemen. And now let's not make anybody wait or ourselves wait. Let's get to the number one. I guess, like you said, since it's my show, I guess I'll go first. We're joking about this now because I'm used to, you know, again, anybody who follows us, I'm used to Jordan hosting our shows here. So it's a little weird for me to take lead here, but why not? I guess it's my show, right? Number one, top five MMA feuds. I see this on top of other people's lists, and so I know I'm not alone here. Perhaps this is yours, so stop me as soon as I say it. But I could not get around putting Sakuraba versus the Gracies as my number one. Jordan?
I I almost did. So here's my thing with Sakuraba versus Gracie's. It was my number one, but I took it off because I thought that was going to be your number one, and I want us to have different lists. No, it 100%. I'll show you my favorite. It's scratched out, but it absolutely deserves to be number one. I took it off my list so I could let you talk about it, and then I'll talk about my number one. Go ahead. It's an amazing rivalry.
So, again, proves how well Jordan knows me and proves how well of the same ilk and era we come from. But, yeah, I again, as much of a contrarian as I want to be, which you'll know if you don't already know, or soon will know, listeners of the show, you can't get around this one. I mean, you're talking about our roots, like I was kind of aforementioned, to the Japanese and pro wrestling scene. None brought up better than Sakuraba, who went against the Gracies, who, from back then knowledge to even casual knowledge of MMA today, you talk about Gracies, or you talk about grappling and MMA, it's going to come back to jiu-jitsu or the Gracies. That's even still today. That's how strong the narrative is, and well-deserving. That's how strong the Gracie narrative is, despite them not having, you know, aside from maybe Kron making some waves now, they really haven't had much to say in the past decade. Regardless, that's how well-deserving they are. Now, their narrative is even more stronger when we rewind all the way back to 2000, you know, I originally was like, oh, yeah, his first fight was Hoist, and that long fight we all remember. But it's actually, his first fight was actually against
Hoyler.
Hoyler, yeah. At a Pride, was it 8? I'm pulling it up now. Hoyler, long, yeah, it was Pride 8.
Yeah,
there we go.
Long, long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This was 1999, people, by the way, for those. Yeah. This is, you know, almost two decades past when we were recording this.
Yes.
For future time capsule. you know, once the world was destroyed, the only thing left is the Protecting It podcast, of course. Yeah, 2008, and against Hoyler, he got a Kimura, which is impressive because he gets a Kimura finish as well against Henzo.
Henzo, yeah.
And he fought, just to kind of encapsulate it, he fought four Gracies, okay? He fought Haim, Hoist, Henzo, and Hoyler, and they're all great, and I don't mean to pick apart Gracie's splitting hairs, but if we're talking about competitive grapplers, both in MMA and grappling, the top of the list would be Henzo and Hoyler in that list, okay? And those are the guys that Sakuraba submitted, just for some perspective. He fought the longest match ever against Hoist, and I believe he TKO'd Haim. But, I mean, again, this guy, I mean, it was crazy because he comes from more of a lineage that I'm familiar with, catch wrestling,
right.
That I kind of mentioned earlier with Neil Melanson, and Neil turned me on to guys like Billy Robinson,
yeah.
And all these old-school guys like from the UK and all these places around the world that embrace this art of catch wrestling because – you know, before there were mats, people, before Brazilian jiu-jitsu, there was jiu-jitsu. But even before jiu-jitsu, it was wrestling and catch wrestling because we were grappling on stone floors. There was no pulling guard because there was no mats. I mean, back in human age society, we were really breaking down the nitty-gritty history of combat. And that was the grappling style that Sakuraba embraced. He would attend these Billy Robinson seminars, these catch wrestlers that made their claim in the 1960s and 70s. And, took down, you know, one of the biggest grappling names in the sport, and yes, you know, Hoist would get his revenge later, but just for that alone, I'll let Jordan kind of jump in on this and touch it, because even though it wasn't his official number one, I want to hear what he has to say about this. But that is why, essentially, it's my number one.
That it's totally deserving of a number one. Sakuraba versus the Gracies. This was kind of what put. You know, at this point, after UFC 1, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was like, whoa, what is this? This Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is, no one's going to beat this. And like, obviously, we see different disciplines coming in, but then that was still kind of the grappling one. Like, there were wrestlers coming in, wrestlers were doing well, but wrestlers were still getting caught in submissions. It was basically, if you wanted to do submissions, you would do Jiu-Jitsu. If you wanted to just work on top control, land ground and pound, then you would work on your wrestling. There wasn't really an in-between. Enter Sakuraba, a guy who's going to use catch wrestling and shoot wrestling to kind of bridge that gap, if you will, between submissions and being able to control position well with like top dominance. Something that we didn't see a lot of jiu-jitsu guys back in the night. The Gracies do. They were mostly working from guard and working from, you know, working submissions from the bottom. And they would use reversals and use sweeps and things like that. But, and like I said, I had to come to this after the fact because 1999, I was not concerned with mixed martial arts. I was watching the Bulls, and I was being a normal 12-year-old kid. But You know, going back and watching, I've watched his fight since with Hoyler. Yeah, he gets him in that Kimura. It's like a double top wrist lock is kind of like what he explained it as. You know, it had a technical term, a Japanese name that I don't know and I don't want to butcher, so I don't want to try that. But, you know, he gets Hoyler with that. He then has what a lot of people, a lot of MMA historians, if you have any of those, if you want to consider anybody an MMA historian, someone who's been around since the beginning, a lot of people consider Hoist versus Sakuraba the best MMA fight of all time. Like, let that sink
sure.
in. Yeah, it's 6 15-minute rounds. 6 15-minute rounds. That's a 90-minute fight that these guys went out. And it was they finally, I think, stopped it at the end. Sakuraba gets the win. But, I mean, he goes on to break Henzo's arm. Didn't just sub him, broke his arm because Henzo wouldn't tap from that Kimura. And then, he got the nickname the Gracie Killer, which is one of the most badass nicknames that anyone can ever have inside of, you know, you're taking down the first family of MMA. That's what you're known for. You're known for beating the most prestigious family in the sport. That's fucking unheard of and amazing. And, 100%, that's totally deserving. Sakuraba versus the Gracies.
Yeah, you're right. To be given that nickname amongst, you know, martial arts, one of the most respected cultures in Japan, that means something for sure. That's not a slight. And so I'm glad that you had that at least as your number one in spirit, Jordan. But do tell, what is your number one?
All right, so this is one that when you said MMA feuds, the reason I put this at number one, not only because I thought you'd have Sakuraba versus the Gracies, but this is the first thing that popped in my head. When I think of an MMA feud, I'm thinking of two guys who might be, this is an opinion, who might be the two best pure fighters I've ever seen fight, have against each other. And that's Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier. This nice. One, they've only fought the one time, unfortunately. You know, they're going to fight again. It's going to happen. There's been a lot of outside, you know, I'm not going to split hairs. Jon Jones has screwed up them not being able to fight again. But I think, in my estimation, Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier might be the two best fighters I've ever seen. I think you can argue, you know, this guy's record this guy's record that, but just going off all the years of watching fights and all the fighters I know and all the technique that I've learned, just watching how dominant guys can be, I think Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier are my one and two best fighters I've ever seen. And the fact that they've fought before, and it was so... Do you remember the lead up to this fight, Jones and Cormier?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was insane, because Cormier is a guy who was wrecking heavyweights. Mm-hmm. Literally only dropped out of heavyweight because he didn't want to fight his buddy, who was the champ. That's the reason he dropped out, because he didn't want to fight his friend and teammate, who was the reigning champ, who was looking like a killer, Cain Velasquez. So DC drops down, and he is wrecking fools at 205. And Jon Jones has been wrecking fools at 205. And it was this unstoppable force versus this immovable object. And it was such a... And man, you couldn't... And I feel bad for DC, because he is such a good, genuine guy. This is this is the biggest dichotomy of a good guy versus a bad guy. But people still root for the freaking bad guy. When you go to a press conference, people are still cheering Jones, even though he's getting in trouble for hit and runs, and he's failing drug tests, and he's getting pulled from fights. And DC is nothing but a class act, you know, company guy, does everything you want. And they boo him. They boo him.
Blows me away.
It's crazy, but you know what? That's a testament to how good Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier are. It is such a huge rivalry, and it all came to a head at UFC 178, that press conference, when DC put his head up on Jones's up in his face, and they pushed, and that was straight up. If there were no people there, we were going to see a fight. We were going to see those two. And I think I've seen a lot of them where it's like, this is staged. They're putting this on. That wasn't staged. These dudes do not like each other one bit, and they got in each other's face, and they were ready. Dave Scholler was about to be a casualty right there. he was a tiny man in between two monstrous killers, looking like just looking terrified. But I put it at number one because of the level of skill between them. I think when it's all said and done, I don't think that you could I mean, you can obviously argue. It's an opinion. You can argue whatever you want. But I think you can make a very strong case that Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier will go down as the number one and number two best fighters of all time, just pure fighters. And you can, again, you can make arguments for a lot of guys based on record and all that good stuff. But I think the lead up to their fight and then the fact that Jon Jones beat Daniel Cormier the way he did and the aftermath. Do you remember the aftermath? Do you remember DC in the post-fight? It was heartbreaking. Because this dude, the lead up to this fight, I mean, you had so much vehement trash talk between these guys. They clearly hated each other. And afterwards, Daniel Cormier looked like a broken man. He looked heartbroken. He said, you could tell he had been crying. He said, I've just never been in there with anyone that strong. Like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say top three. That's amongst my top three disappointing, like, heartfelt moments at a press conference. Post BJ Penn, Frank Krieger 3, post UFC 125, Gray Maynard, after getting the draw and learning he's not even going to get a rematch. And number one would be what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely, Daniel Cormier.
It's so much, and you know what, too? It builds so much on their inevitable rematch, man. And then remember, when they have the rematch scheduled, they're going up. We're days out. We're watching Embedded. And then we find out that Jones tests positive and gets pulled from the card. And we had to watch Dana tell DC, and DC broke down, and it is hard to watch that video. He has been training so hard. This guy he's such a bad role model, and DC is such a good role model, and everything that DC's worked for, Jon Jones has. And then you're going to take away the opportunity to fight him that many days out. To me, it's the one that I am invested most in. It's the one that I think is the most talent between the two guys. And it's my number one, Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier.
Dude, I'm so glad you put that on there. This was amongst the category that the reason why it didn't make my list, because it was amongst the category of recent / potential ongoing feuds. Sure. Now, although I'm with you that, you know, when you look, I'm not trying to, I want to be an optimist, but being a realist and being informed as you are, I know that, you know, with recent events, it looks really glum. And if we do have it, we're not going to have it on fair terms, at least for Daniel Cormier. Yeah. He is an athletic outlier as well. Jon Jones isn't the only athletic outlier, obviously, but not comparing the two to each other, it's honest and it's fair to say that Daniel Cormier is more toward the end Absolutely. Of his athletic outlying span. And that was great because, again, like people that were, again, I'm not saying in the know, like were any better or anything, but just people that were following the sport, like this was a match that was being built up before it was being built up. I mean, I remember I was one of the people calling that Daniel Cormier, when he was a heavyweight and before Strikeforce, you know, when Strikeforce was still a thing, I was like, this is the guy that's going to fight Jones. I know he's going to eventually drop down, and I don't see anybody in the near future challenging this freak that is Jon Jones. This is the guy. This is the guy. Knockout power, boxing range, forward pressure, durability, wrestling, Olympic athlete outlier. This is the guy. And so many of us that were, you know, in the know even, we're so convinced of that. And that's what made that first fight so great. And even though what people, you know, I don't like this revisionist history that Daniel Cormier was washed. Like, it was a clear decision for Jon Jones, for sure. But it wasn't like a one-sided drubbing by any means.
No.
Like, Cormier had his moments. You were excited the whole way through. It was a good fight.
Yeah.
And I think people lose that, and probably will lose that even more so, the fact that the narrative's kind of been lost. We've been built up, like Jordan was saying so many times. I remember I had a near 2,000-word summary breakdown of the second fight that just had to be thrown right in the trash at the cutting room floor with the last-minute UFC 200 stuff. Yeah. So even though it was, you know, on that cusp of recent ongoing, it still almost made my list because it is that strong. And as Jordan said, it is that deserving. That's a great choice.
It's the only one on there that gets a visceral reaction out of me because it's so hard to watch some of that stuff for me because DC and I've literally said two words to DC in my life and it was via Twitter. That's it. And he responded and it was a very quick, small conversation. It wasn't even a conversation. We both exchanged cordials and that's it. But everyone I know that knows DC, just he's a salt of the earth guy. He's the nicest dude on the planet. And you want good things for him. And so you're emotionally invested. And I'm also emotionally invested in Jon Jones because in my estimation, he's the best fighter I've ever seen. And it's not close. And so I'm emotionally invested in both these guys. And I think that's why it ranks so high for me, because it's the only one that gets this reaction out of me.
Powerful. And dovetailing your DC point before we close off to the next segment, just kind of a quick testimonial. Not only do I know fighters and coaches who have nothing but the highest regard to say about DC, I'll skip any of that name dropping and go to something else. And shout out to Russ from Boston. I hope you're listening to Russ, because I know Russ supports my work and stuff. And Russ is a longtime MMA fan. He's a longtime caller to Junkie Radio. He doesn't call as much these days, but he's still a part of the fam. And he called into a Junkie Radio show when DC was like, I don't know if he's in the studio. Probably was actually on the phone, to be honest, but DC's great. He would always call in Junkie Radio and kind of give himself more than the typical, you know, press promoting the fight. Like, he would really open himself up, because that's the kind of guy he is. And this guy, Russ from Boston, DC is his favorite fighter. And Russ said, hey, man, you're my favorite fighter, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to be supporting you. I don't even think Russ asked for anything. And I'm probably brutalizing the story. But at the end of the day, the point of the story is that DC, without Russ really even asking for anything, said, hey, stay on the line. Not even his show. Okay. Stay on the line. Get your information. I'm going to pay for your ticket, your plane ticket. I'm going to make sure you get to this show, since I'm your favorite fighter. And I forget what fight it was, but it was one of the many, sadly, you know, people criticize DC for pulling out fights, but I believe it was one of the first that kind of issued this trend of DC pulling out of fights. And DC, Russ is like a humble dude. I don't even think Russ even freaking reached out to follow up. But like, hey, man, so you're going to take care of me? Your fight got canceled. Can you take care? That's kind of an awkward message if you're conscious, right? You know what I'm saying? DC made sure that he got taken care of at the next show. I think this went on for like a year till his next fight eventually happened. But he stayed in contact with Russ and took care of him. Just a random fan who called him by happenstance. That's just one small fragment and faction of all the many important things that we don't know going on in DC's life. But he takes the fucking time to do stuff for fans. So, yeah, great dude, great dude. All right, before we get to our honorable mentions, we've been talking long enough. Let's knock out our submissions and transition segment. Insert funny 3D stuff coming. All right, there you go. There's your effect. The submissions in transition segment, where if you were smart enough to use the hashtag #ProtectYourNeckPodcast, we will address those now. This is the part of the show. Again, if it's a breakdown show, you want something broken down, you want a technical question, that's what you use it for the top five shows. Obviously, use it to submit your top five list. So we're going to go into the Twitter and chat room and miscellaneous David Bowie labyrinth machine. We'll just call it that. Shout out.
Codpiece.
Departed. Yeah, departed David Bowie. And we're gonna look at that at some top fives. All right. Let's see. Oh, we got speaking of MMA junkie, we have a long time Junkie Nation person. Not person. I should say jiu-jitsu connoisseur, jiu-jitsu black belt, MMA fan, Wanley Tran, California area. Good dude Wanley is. Wanley says, let's see. Oh, Wanley gives us his full top five list. Wanley agrees with us. His number one is Soccer Robert versus the Gracie. So, props, Wanley. I really like his number two, though. I think of this whole list, I'm looking at it right now, and as an old-school fan, Jordan, I know you'll appreciate Wanley's number two. Wanley had Brazilian top team versus Shootbox.
Oh, man. That's a huge one for the advancement of Brazilian mixed martial artists.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that Pride era where everything was at a cross-section, like everybody's career, all these eras and entities. Well, that feud was definitely amongst that cross-section. Good pick, Wanley.
Yeah, also probably responsible for shortening a few guys' careers, but 100% true.
We'll look past that part, but yes, you're right. While he had for number three, he had Dominic Cruz versus Team Alpha Male, kind of like what you were saying. You kind of branch off that as well. More than fair. Great pick. For number four, he you can tell Wanley's a Pride fan like us. Shootbox versus Hammer House.
Oh, great shit. Pick. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great pick. I mean, the Mark Coleman broken arm, you want to talk about, whew. You know, even if it was a 2-0 thing for Shogun at the end of it. You know, that broken arm made for controversy, and controversy always sparks fun and drama. So, number five, you had Frank Mir versus Brock Lesnar. Classic UFC.
Very good one.
Let's see. Gabe Killian. Gabe Killian writes articles for Odds Breaker. Sometimes he is an addition to the MMA Roasted podcast.
Yep, I've heard him on Roasted, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Shout out to Gabe there. Gabe just lists three, but they're good ones. Tito and Chuck, which you had. Tito and Shamrock, which I had. And which neither of us had, Penn versus Pulver, which is probably most important feud of BJ Penn's career, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely kind of took him to the next level. Yeah.
Yeah, great stuff. And let's see, I believe that's it, which is okay. We're just getting started here. We're just getting off the ground, but thank you guys for participating. That could, if you participate again, even if there's a lot of you, which I hope there is in the future, I will do my best to get to them in the submissions in transition segment, whether it's top five. If you want something broken down that you might not think is going to get broken down, or a particular question as far as techniques go, use the hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast for that. Honorable mentions. I mean, I have some here. I'll just name off a few, and you can name off a few, Jordan. But Aldo McGregor, that's more of a recent one. I felt obviously, you know, was pretty big. Vanderlei Silva versus Rampage Jackson. You want to talk about, long ranging ones? I actually, for some reason, thought that would be on yours, just because I know you're a fan of those dudes as well.
On my honorable mention as well.
Nice. Alvarez versus Bjorn Rebney.
That's a good one.
ATT versus Black Zillions. Another alpha male one I had, again, amongst the angles, except for the key one that I fucking missed. Thankfully, you had. I had alpha male versus Nova and Yao. I like that kind of camp.
That was a good
divisions
one.
Within the same time. What are some of your honorable mentions before I draw on you?
Honestly, we've covered most of them. The only other one that I think we didn't really touch on is one that I had that was kind of a general one, was old school one, Lucha Libre versus BJJ. Back when mixed martial arts was starting to get off its ground, and this is something I had to go back and learn about after the fact because I wasn't around for it. But you had specialists, you had guys who practiced the discipline of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and you had guys who came from the background of Lucha Libre, and so it was very different fighting styles, and oftentimes they would purposefully match those guys up in Pride to kind of see how it would go down. So it was very, very interesting.
I'm glad you brought up Lucha Libre, because as a catch wrestling guy, I should know a lot about Lucha Libre, because it has similar dynamics from the martial art to the feud that you're speaking of. I will end with these two things. One of the most deepest, darkest feuds that almost made it on my list, it's not a popular one, but it is seriously one of the most raw and disturbing, because I like both guys, but it was a disturbing feud. Dan Hardy versus Marcus Davis. Do you remember that, Jordan?
Yeah, I do.
Dan Hardy was one of the first to use the Photoshop and the internet at this time. He was one of the first to kind of pioneer that into the MMA feud. And it got to a point where Marcus Davis, who was still relevant at the time, and this kind of marked on his way out, sadly. I mean, there was still reasonable to think that he could not only win this fight against Dan Hardy, but Marcus Davis could still possibly make a run that we all wanted him to see once he rounded out his boxing. But he was in tears with emotion and anger because Dan Hardy chose the internet to promote this fight, and his kid was getting taunted at school. And it was just such a visceral, personal feud that I felt it needed to be mentioned. But
that's a good one, because that was that was really strange in the fact that I didn't hear about a lot of the lead up, and so I didn't understand why Davis was so upset. It wasn't until after the fact that I learned about all the lead up to it that I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. Because watching it at the time, I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, Marcus Davis isn't like this normally. So there's something going on here. But yeah, that's a good one. Good call.
And the last one before we call it a close here, there is no top five worst MMA feuds, but I think I have a strong argument for the number one of worst MMA feuds. And that's Randy Couture versus the UFC. Because not only was it the best narrative of a movie, literally the movie The Natural, where his namesake, Robert Redford, the baseball movie, we saw, in a sport that, we were brutally reminded of with Yair Rodriguez, not only eats its young, but feeds it smilingly to hungry, marauding, casual fans, that haven't been following the sport as long, and nothing against that. They make our sport grow. But I say that, and I worded that way to kind of encapsulate how brutal the nature of our sport really is. And you have this guy, Randy Couture, saying, fuck that narrative. I'm going to be the outlier, which, the way our sport's going, those outliers are going to become fewer and fewer, if not abysmal. There aren't going to be any more Randy Couture's or BJ Penn's. He was breaking that narrative, and not only did it disrupt that narrative in his comeback where, oh, it's cute, he's going to come back and challenge Tim Sylvia, who we laugh at Tim Sylvia now. No one could beat Tim Sylvia in the relevant division of 2006 then. And then even when he shocked the world and beat Tim Sylvia, even people like myself who were members and training at Extreme Couture quietly felt bad. I mean, we saw Randy Couture bringing in big guys and slamming punching bags into the warehouse at Extreme Couture, but we all kind of were nervous, right? Yeah. even his most heartfelt supporters. And he fucking – we saw Gabe Gonzaga, you know, he broke his nose, his arm, or we broke Andrew Couture's arm, but yet he was making the one Gabe Gonzaga almost mentally quit calling for the referee, a tough man in his prime. And it costed us – that feud costed us arguably – you know, this may be a top five that comes later on, but top five matches that could have been my number one, without a doubt, Fedor versus Randy Couture. Right. Yeah. It fucking costed us that match, man. So that's my number one worst. What do you think about that, Jordan?
I think that's an amazing one. My number one worst would probably be illiterate MMA fans and grappling.
Oh yeah. That's an ongoing one. It's long going and ongoing.
It's something that you don't see as much in bigger markets or markets that get a lot of fights. You don't see it as much in Vegas. You don't see it as much in places that the UFC travels to a lot. But I was at one when Sam Alvey, my podcast co-host, fought in Nashville against Derek Brunson. Didn't go well for him. Derek Brunson smacked him around a little bit. But it's okay. We joke about it. Stupid sexy Brunson. But anyways, that entire night was filled with an entire arena in Nashville booing every time a fight would go to the mat. Every single time. As soon as the guy's butt would hit the mat, they would start booing because they just didn't understand. They didn't understand anything that wasn't punching each other in the face or kicking each other in the head as hard as they could. So there was a really good fight between Ray Borg and John Herrera. It was grappling the entire time. I was super enthralled. It was a great fight. And people were literally trying to throw shit into the cage because they didn't understand what was happening. And it was driving me berserk. So hopefully it'll go away at some point, but it's ongoing and it's long going, like you said.
Fucking great mention right there. I like that mention as well. MMA fans versus grappling and Randy Couture versus Fedor. If that doesn't cover everything in between, I don't know what does for you guys. Before we close out here, we love Smile and Sam. Obviously, I told you guys when you guys, you know, thank you guys by the way for having me on your show. I told Smile and Sam, as a Southpaw counterfighter, of course I'm a fan and always will be a fan of Smile and Sam regardless. But speaking of that man and your podcast, before we close out of here, Jordan, why don't you just tell the fans and everybody where they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, you guys can check out the Pound for Pound podcast. It drops every week, usually on Tuesdays, sometimes Wednesdays, depending if Sam's traveling, at MMALatestNews.com, or you can find it on iTunes or the App Store or the Google Play Store, all that good stuff. Anywhere you can find podcasts, it's Pound for Pound podcast, or on Facebook, there's the official page. It's the Pound for Pound podcast, Sam Alvey and Jordan Killian. You can find the page there. You can submit. You can basically talk to Sam directly through there because he's on the page a lot. He's a bum, but he's got a fight coming up. Make sure you guys watch UFC card. It's headlined by Cerrone and Masvidal, which is a son of a bitch of a fight. But Sam's fighting Nate Marquardt in Denver. He's there training right now, so it would mean a lot to him and to me if you guys watched and supported him. So check that out and watch his fight.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because we'll obviously be rooting for Sam, but Jordan's a bit modest here, folks. He really is freaking awesome. That podcast is really awesome. Sam, if his freaking smile is not intoxicating enough, just give the podcast, listen to subscription. They've put way much more work in the book. I can't even honestly look all y'all in the face and ask for a positive rating and review. But the Pound for Pound podcast has put their work in, and they deserve it. So please listen. Please favorably rate and review. Subscribe to them. Follow Jordan Killian. Bother him online. Tell him thank you for coming on the show, so it'll be easier for me to convince him to come on again because he's awesome. And until then, you can, you know, find me at my normal places. My breakdowns will be dropping on Flow Combat. And wait, one more second. I want Jordan to get one more thing in here.
Yeah, just real quick. If you guys do listen to the Pound for Pound podcast, go find the one with Rich Franklin and watch what it's real. Just listen how it's real awkward when he didn't want to be on my show and I kept asking him questions. Go listen to that one. It's a really good one.
So good.
He was like, 1FC contractually made me be here. Hurry up and get this damn thing over with. That was basically the tone of the Rich Franklin interview.
Not only will you see behind the Wizard of Oz's awkward curtain, a peek behind that, but you'll also see how good Jordan Killian is for how good he handles that. So equally entertaining as it is impressive. Definitely check out that Rich Franklin episode to warm your sensibilities up if you're not already familiar with the Pound for Pound podcast. As you know, I also am still associated with Jordan through MMA Latest. I will still be contributing there. In the last couple of weeks, if you saw, I did a Jessica Andrade interview through there and my long form BJ Penn, which I highly recommend you check out even more so now that he got decimated and he is just even more so the pun of casual fans jokes. Go check it out and see the relevance of his career there. If not, it's posted on my site, mixedmartialanalyst.com, where you can find all my content. Future content and breakdowns will be coming out on flowcombat.com. I think I can at least peek a little bit at it now, but I can tell you that I have some Submission Underground pieces coming out with Flow. That'll be fun building up to that event, as well as, of course, yes, my normal breakdown with UFC Denver, which we will be breaking down in-depth for you gambling junkies hitting me up for that in-depth stuff. Thank you for bearing with me, by the way, during this transitionary period. But the Protecting Net podcast has come through to save us, thankfully. It will be delivering all the stuff you like, from in-depth plays to technical coverage. I got Angelo Reyes coming on next podcast. Nice. Yeah, you're familiar with him. Yeah. And he'll be Frank Mir's coach. Frank Mir, obviously, you know, been on the Pound for Pound podcast before, I guess, your guys as well. He's a renowned striking coach from Wild Card, Freddie Roach, and also has a traditional martial arts Temple Freddie background, which I found out. So we will be picking his brain next week. Tune in for that. Hopefully you enjoyed this. Follow my man Jordan Killian at JKillianMMA. Follow me, the rest of my contact, at the MMAnalyst. And until next time, protect your neck.